All right. This is going to be a very, very, just a little bit of a departure from our usual format. Stay tuned. We got a good one for you. Today, we are talking with the staff, at least those who would, you know, agree to come on. We're telling good stories and maybe some bad stories about Christmas and our Christmas experiences. Yes, Mark, what's going on?
I'm so excited that we get to share, especially the embarrassing stories, those things that really make a difference in when we think about the joy of Christmas. That's the good and the fascinating parts of it with family. And
there's never any bad things that happen at Christmas, right?
That's right.
Yeah, we're going to do another episode sometime where it's all of us talking about great stories that we have to tell from the backside, you know, the behind the scenes at a funeral, right?
I was just thinking that, honest to God. I was thinking, if you could just do funeral stories, that would take hours.
Yep. All right. So, first of all, we have to begin with, I have to ask you the question, can the church be saved? And this is in the context of Christmas.
I have not answered this question in a long, long time.
Can
the church be saved in the context of Christmas? No. I would say not. We have completely abandoned the idea of Advent, and this is my... This is my song and dance. We have abandoned the idea of Advent as a culture. Now, can our congregation be saved? Absolutely it can. In fact, we're doing a good job of having real Advent. But can the church as a whole be saved? No, we have completely bought into American consumeristic culture. We have abandoned... Do you really think to celebrate Jesus' birth... Does that look like anything that we do as a culture?
I had a really, really good Christmas present picked out for you, and now, no.
That's such a lie. That is such a lie. You're too much of a Christian to buy me a present. But honestly, I sit down with groups of people in Sunday school classes or small groups, and I say, great, let's talk about what Jesus does with his life, what he teaches us, to reach out to the marginalized and the poor. Now, that's who he was. That's who he taught. Now, how would we celebrate his birth? Let's just start throwing out answers. Nobody says we should cut down an evergreen tree. Nobody says we should buy presents for kids that have stuff, more stuff than they already, you know. No, it all comes back to we should give to the poor. We should make a difference in people's lives who are hungry or outcast or homeless. And everybody agrees on that. And then we turn and we go back to our consumeristic Christmas. So can the church be saved at Christmas as a culture? No. In our church, I think we're doing a darn good job with Advent, with Christmas shop, with coat drives. I think we're doing good. So there.
Okay. Well, good. I'm glad you got that off your chest.
You asked.
And
okay.
We're gonna move on from there. Is there anything going on that's exciting this week in the church?
Actually, two things that are a little different besides our regular worship experiences. On Sunday night, this coming Sunday night, remember we have our service of Lamentation and Hope. We're very aware, all of us culturally, that Christmas and the holiday season is really hard on some people, especially people who are grieving, that have lost someone significant in their life over this last year. So this is a service that basically says you're not alone. If you're struggling, not only is God with you, and that's what matters ultimately, but we want to be there to support you as well. So it is a service recognizing the pain and then pointing out that light has come into our darkness and that God is with us. So there's that Sunday night at 7:00 in our sanctuary. And then on the 22nd, we're doing something completely new this year. We know that a lot of our congregation travels for Christmas Eve. And so we have people who hear every year about how beautiful our Christmas Eve services are, but they don't get to participate. So this year on the 22nd, that's Thursday night at 7 p.m., we'll have a Christmas Eve service. And let people who are going to be leaving town come and experience what it's like to have communion together on Christmas Eve, to share candlelight in our beautiful sanctuary. So hope everybody can join us for that.
So it's Christmas Eve before Christmas Eve.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. I'm dying to see how this works out. I think this is a very, very interesting idea that maybe it may become its own liturgical holiday across the world.
He's speechless. Are you saying you're dying to see how it's going to work out, as in how many people are going to join us?
No. I just want to see, you know, I don't know. I'm curious about this.
Imagine every other Christmas Eve service you've been to. That's what it's going to look like.
Nice. I like it. Yeah, this is good. So we're joined here today by several members of the staff who are being very, very quiet, and they're trying not to laugh out loud. But, you know, this is what – you can laugh out loud. It's fine. You can do that. You can talk. Yeah, it's fine. Okay, so what we have kind of set this up with them ahead of time by saying that this podcast is the way we're kind of imagining it, is it's sports talk radio that's come to Jesus. So we're having a good time here. Let's see. How do we want to start? Who wants to go first? We've got to start with a crazy story. Does anybody have any crazy stories? Things that were crazy that happened? Denna, you're looking, it's kind of looking like it's you, so.
I might have a crazy story. I actually have a couple. So this was when my son was very young and, you know, connecting with the commercialism of Christmas, he was getting a new bike from Santa. And should we do a disclaimer here?
Let's do that. Yes.
Okay, so adults, if you're listening, at this point, I'd like you to put your AirPods in or maybe go into a different room and shut the door, or perhaps just, you know, make sure that little ears are not listening. So,
that was a very good disclaimer.
Thank you.
That's so good.
Thank you.
Yeah. Wow.
So, my son had asked for a brand new bright red bike from Santa, and the bike was assembled and in our neighbor's storage shed. What was unexpected on Christmas Eve was an ice storm that sealed tightly the door of the storage shed.
Wow.
Now, my son was... It was very important to him that he was on the nice list, not just to have a bicycle, but that he was on the nice list. And it was midnight. The door was not opening. It was 1 o'clock. The door was not opening. And I thought, if I have to tear that storage shed down, my son is not going to wake up on Christmas morning thinking that he was on the naughty list. So at about 2 o'clock in the morning, I started boiling water and poured boiling water over the handle of the shed.
Two in the morning.
I mean, we were running out of time because he was going to be awake at like 4:30, you know, looking for a bike. And so finally, after, you know, several pitchers of boiling hot water and a good swift kick to the door, we got it open and the bike came out. Now, several years later, this same child began to ask some questions, and I had promised myself that when he asked, I would tell him the truth.
Oh, I love where this is going.
And so, you know, the question came, "Mom, is there really a Santa Claus?" And I said, "Well, what do you think?" And he goes, "Well, yeah. You know, I think he was afraid not to say he didn't think there was." And so he looked at me again and I said, "Well, you know, I'm Mrs. Claus." And he goes, "You're Mrs. Claus?" And I said, "Yeah, sort of. And he goes, "Are you telling me that there's not a real Santa Claus?" And I said, "Well, it depends on what you believe about Santa Claus. But yes, the magic happens from Mom." And then he stopped. He was about 9. He started crying, huge, big tears. He screamed, "Liar! Liar! You're a liar!" And I was like, I'm sorry. I was just playing into, you know, the legend of the season. And he was just crying so hard. And he goes, "Does this mean there's not a Rudolph either?"
Oh, man.
Yeah, and I said, "Well, you know, do you think there our flying reindeer, and do you think there's one with this bright red bulb nose? And he just began to sob and said, I can't believe you lied to me. I was planning on visiting him at the North Pole. So those are my tragic stories. But I have a wonderful story. Is now the time for this, or would you rather wait?
I have to chime in and say, you know, when I was asked that kind of question, my answer was, all stories are true. Some actually happened.
Very good.
And I just let that just like sit on my kids, you know. And the kids like, What?
Yeah. You were much more prepared than I had been for that. I'm convinced that there's nothing we can do to our children that several years of therapy can't fix. So there is that.
My family might argue.
So would you like for me to continue with a good story, or you want me to pass for bad stories?
Pass, okay. And then come back to you.
So I'm passing to Shelby.
Hi, thank you. So I'll say Christmas in our family was always very magical. Even to this point, my youngest sister is 24. We still, Christmas Eve, start texting at like 4:30 in the morning. Are you all awake? Like, can we come over? Andrew and I were like, we go to my parents' house. We're there by about 5 a.m. They have the tree on. Like, we rush to my sister's room just like we did when we were, you know, 8 years old. We wait there. My parents say, okay, you can come out. And we still come out. I am 32 years old, and I'm still like this Christmas Eve. I'm like, I can't wait. Like, I can't sleep. It is just... it is, my parents do a great job. It is magical. My story that's embarrassing, at least it was for me at the time. I was 12 or 13 years old, and our Santa left our gifts unwrapped. That's how we knew what gifts from Santa we had. And so again, my sisters and I, we lined up in the hallway. It was time to come in. Dad had the video camera on. Everything was set. We run in. My little sisters are like, oh, yes, I got this. I get this. I'm looking around, and I was like, I don't see my gift from Santa. And there was a Barbie cash register. Again, I was 13 years old. So
Barbie
cash register, where you press the buttons, the cash register opened. There was a microphone. It was Barbie. And I was like, and my mom goes, I think that's your gift from Santa. And I was like, still looking around, I was like, are you sure that's not for Ashlyn or Taylor, who are younger and into Barbie still? And Mom's like, no, I think that you seemed really excited when you saw that in the store. I think that Santa thought that that's what you wanted. And I was like, oh, crush. I was like, I cannot believe I've gotten a Barbie cash register at the age of 13. Did I play with it? Absolutely. Like, we played restaurant and had all sorts of fun with it. But at that time, I was like, okay, maybe I need to be aware when I'm in stores, because I did see it in Walmart or something. I was like, this is so cool. I'm pressing all the buttons. My mother, I guess, noticed and was like, oh, she really likes this. So from then on out, when I was at the store, I was like, this is really cool, but I don't want it from Santa. I would play with things in the store, but I'd be like, just to clarify, I do not want this as my gift from Santa. Because it was, you know, everyone at school like, oh, what'd you get? And I was like, a Barbie cash register. And they're like, oh, cool. I was like, no, it's not. But we did have fun playing with it. But that was my embarrassing story that I still remember from many years ago.
Training for when you become a parent.
Yes. It was very fun. So, all right, Matt.
I have gone back and forth on what story to tell, but I think like it was really, really tough for me to figure that out, because and I wanted to at least mention the fact that as an adult, I did watch my brother throw a turkey. So maybe in the future, if we do more these. Throw a chair because of a turkey. I said throw a turkey, didn't I?
You said throw a turkey, but.
Okay. Yes, no, he didn't throw the turkey. He threw the chair because of the burnt turkey that he was responsible for. So my grandfather and
my thing is that that absolutely nobody really likes turkey. But go on.
Well, we refer to him as Bobby Knight at most of our holiday events. However, I won't get into that because I wouldn't tell a bunch of people that my older brother throws chairs. however, my Christmas story would go to, I believe I was in about the second grade, and this was my second trip to Disney. My mother had been planning, she wanted to go to Disney for Christmas. And I don't think she was quite as into Disney maybe as Shelby, but she was pretty, she was pretty excited about doing this Christmas in Disney World. So we did all the consumer Christmas things like Mark was talking about before, you know, like 2 days before. So it's kind of like the pre-Christmas Eve service. It was just Christmas before we left. So we got to Orlando, or about 7 miles from Orlando, and for the next 17 hours we were in, which I don't know if there's any truth to this, my dad still cites this, we were in what he claims was the world's longest traffic jam at the time. So it was kind of like the Griswolds. We never made it to Disney on Christmas Day. My brother and I learned some new words that day. At one point, my mother took my brother and I remember sitting in this little gas station. Just, they had a Pac-Man game, and she let us play Pac-Man, and she cried a little bit. And at some point, I think we walked back to the hotel that we, like, it was one of those situations where walking was going to be easier than waiting. And I remember my father getting there late that evening with a little defeated look on his face. And he didn't hold Mickey Mouse hostage or anything like that. We did make it to Disney the following day.
Yay.
And I mean, Disney World's Disney World if you're in the second grade. So whether it's on Christmas Day or the day after Christmas, it really didn't matter to us. It certainly mattered to her, though. So I kind of felt like that was a little bigger than Mark throwing his burnt fried turkey or chair because of the fried turkey. But that was the one I wanted to go with.
I'm very curious about this turkey incident, but I want to say more about that. But it seems to me that it's a season where the expectations are so high, right? Especially when you're a kid, you're looking, and as adults we kind of figure out that, oh, that's a sure way to be disappointed, right? When you know, to have lower your expectations, and then some good might come from it. But yeah, that's fun. That's a fun story. Is it my turn to talk, or is it, no? Do you want to talk?
No, I didn't know you had a story. You've got
I don't have a story.
Okay, then I have
no stories.
I have
stories. I do have a story, but I'll tell it later.
Okay. One of the apocryphal stories in our family was, you know, when we were children, we got 1,000 little things, and it was so great. And you get to be old enough, and you don't get, I mean, you get one thing, and it just sucks. It's just awful. Well, one year, my brother and I go to bed. He's in his room. I'm in my room, and it's 6 a.m., 7 a.m. I'm probably 12. He's probably 15, 16. And it's obvious my parents have overslept, and they didn't get up because Santa would come out and put presents out. And we hear... they hear movement in our rooms where we're both starting to wake up, and we hear my father say, "Stay in your room and don't look out the window," which is, of course, a ridiculous statement to make. So we're both looking out the window, and this is the year that my father, God bless him, decided they were going to get us a weightlifting set. So we're both watching through the crack in the window, my father try to lift 110-pound weightlifting set out of the trunk of the car and carry it across the lawn, dropping it a couple of times. And then he finally got it in there. It's like, okay, you can come out now. And that was, so welcome to Christmas. That's when you're a little older and you're like, well, okay, at least I like the weightlifting set. That was cool.
That has, and you say you don't like the Christmas story.
I don't.
And that, but and yet that has that kind of air to that story. I mean, it has that kind of feel, right? Yeah.
Must be trauma. I've been traumatized by
trauma. It. Yeah, yeah. Okay, who's next? Who's next?
Are we ready for a good story?
Well, I'm.
Yes.
I'm trying to think if my story is which is it? Is it poignant? Is it meaningful? Is it funny? Is it? I don't know. I don't really know.
Sure.
I want you to. I'm going to keep thinking about it. So yeah, you tell yours. You know what you're doing. I have no idea what I'm doing.
I'm just talking. I do have a story about throwing a turkey, but we'll save that for another day for a different podcast.
I love this idea, throwing turkeys.
Yes, it's a thing.
Christmas sport.
It's a thing. It's a thing. So that same little boy who branded me a liar forgave me, and he grew up to join the Army. So the day that he signed the papers to go into the Army as a commissioned officer, I had this little emotional breakdown, but I said to him, before you go, I would like 1 week with you, just the two of us, 1 week. And so the week after Christmas, the year before he graduated college, he came home and we went to a beautiful Christmas Eve service together, much like we'll have here on December the 24th at First United Methodist Church, Oak Ridge, 1350 Oak Ridge Turnpike. Thank you. 4, 7, and 11 for any time that works for your family. So we went to this beautiful Christmas Eve service. We came home, got a little sleep, then woke up early and drove to the Atlanta airport. We flew to Italy for Christmas, and it was wonderful. You know, I had several years to save up, and it took me 3 years to save up to have enough money to go. But we flew out on Christmas Day, and it was just wonderful sharing that flight to Italy with him. It was stillness, it was quiet, it was everything that I hoped it to be. So we got to Italy. We spent most of our time in Tuscany, but my son had an opportunity to be in Rome for an extended time, and he wanted to show me where he had lived when he was in Rome. So on a whim, we took the bullet train up to Rome, and we were in Vatican City. Enjoyed that very much, but Vatican City was closing down, and it was time to leave. So we were, you know, getting our souvenirs from the souvenir shop at Vatican City and making our way out when I noticed hordes of people coming in. And I said to him, what's going on? Because it's time to go, but yet all these people are coming in. And he went, Mom, it's Saturday. It's Mass. And I said, oh, wow, can we go? And so there we were in Vatican City the week of Christmas. And I walked into Mass not knowing what to expect. Didn't understand anything because it was all in Latin, but I didn't need to understand the words because the Spirit of God was there. And I remember sitting down in the pew, looking up at the priest, and just immediately beginning to cry, being covered with chills, although not knowing what he was saying, knowing what he was saying, because it was Christmas, and we were in the Vatican City, and I knew the story that he was telling of the birth of the Christ and God incarnate in our world. And it was just the most wonderful experience that I never could have expected. So much better than a bike locked in a storage shed of the neighbor's house.
Yay!
I need to follow that up because you reminded me of my favorite Christmas, but this is the flip side of it, okay? This is the flip side of the Italian holiday Christmas. We did that. You know, my kids we raised them to be travelers, and there was a year where we decided we were going to go to Italy also on Christmas, for Christmas. Well, we were going to fly out of Atlanta, and we got to Atlanta, and they issued us 5 boarding passes. Well, there's 6 of us. And we were like, what's wrong? What's the deal? And after, you know, 45 or so minutes of the guy sitting at the terminal typing everything, he hands us 6 boarding passes. And we looked at them and said, these are first class. So we go and we get on the plane and we fly from here to Brussels in first class. It is fabulous. It's incredible. It's a Christmas miracle. The only problem is there was a really major blizzard in Europe, and our flight was delayed. And guess what? We were greeted as we came off the plane with somebody handing us boarding passes. We said, you missed your connection. Here's your boarding passes for your flight. It leaves in 12 hours. Oh, cool. So that means we're going to get to Milan late, and we won't be able to. We had a night in Venice scheduled, and we're going to miss out on a night in Venice. And then so we get to Milan, and we wait for all of the luggage to come off the plane.
Oh, no.
Ours was not there. Six people, no luggage. No luggage. And so we you know, we toughen up and we get going and we go on and just, you know, you don't invest in a whole new wardrobe when you think your luggage is coming the next day. But you can't foretell the future either. And it took 5 days. 5 days for our luggage to show up. And yeah, and it was, we were going to be there for, we were in Rome for Christmas Eve. We decided we were going to get out and get some clothes finally, so we could have a change of clothes. And we found there was somebody selling this really bright red underwear on the street. It was like a street vendor selling this bright, and my kids were absolutely horrified that we were out there buying red underwear from a street vendor in Rome. And then we're walking, we're trying to get some, we look at a couple of shops, you know, everything's way too expensive, and then you know, it's stores start to close, and you know, I'm kind of a Scrooge. I really don't. Yeah, I know. Shocker, right? I'm not really one to get into all of this stuff, but we go. We're going. The shops are closing. We don't have any clothes, and then it starts pouring down rain. And
you're on the naughty list.
I said, this is just not what Christmas is supposed to be like. And we all went back to our hotel, and we all just, we finally lost it. We were just like pity party big time and everything. But then the next day we woke up Christmas morning and the sun was shining. We went out and saw Pope, which was it? It was before it wasn't Francis. It was the
John
last.
Paul II.
No, that would have been cool. Yeah, in between Benedict. Yes, we saw Benedict was. We were blessed by Benedict, and you know what? I just texted my kids recently saying, you know what, the best Christmas was. I think it was the one where we went to Italy. Because it's notorious for, I mean, we all refer to it as being just this awful, awful, you know, where everything went wrong, you know. And yet now I look back on it and think, you know, yeah, that was a good one. That was really a good one. Jenny, top that.
Well, I'm not going to top that. Good. I'm not even going to try. Good. I know better than to try to top one of Steve's stories. I just recently got here, so I've missed most of the stories. But the one that I was thinking about, and at the risk of getting a little theological, Christmas and all, I mean, the whole challenge and beauty of church work is we have this ideal in God, and then we're supposed to, like, enact it with people on earth. And so that's always a challenge. And Christmas is the same thing. We have these incredibly high hopes and ideals, and yet most of us spend Christmas with our families.
And so there's a little bit of a disconnect there at times, but we do it nonetheless. So anyway, there were several stories I thought of that I chose not to share publicly. But the one that I was thinking about, so I am the youngest of six children. And so, of course, as the youngest, I was always the one that was most excited Christmas morning. And I got clear guidelines about what time I was allowed to wake people up. 8 o'clock. I wasn't allowed to wake anyone up until 8 a.m.
Wow, 8.
So,
miraculous.
My birthday, take note, is October 26th, for all of you to note. And so that one year, I believe it was probably my 9th birthday, I was given a watch for my birthday, which I was pretty excited about. So I wore this watch constantly, and I showed it off to everyone, and it was just a wonderful thing. So we have our Christmas Eve, we go to bed, I wake up, it's probably not light, I start looking, you know, grab my watch, and I get up, and I was a very good little child in that I did not touch anything. I wasn't allowed to touch any of the presents under the tree because we had gone from no presents to this. I mean, I was one of six children, and we were blessed to have a fair number of presents. Similarly, you know, I would move the stockings but not take anything out so I could get a better view, you know, of what was in there, and just saw all those special things, and I just keep looking at my watch. It's like, oh, good gracious, it's 7, it's 7:15, it's 7:30, I've got a whole another half an hour. And then I noticed the clock in the living room, and it was not 7:30, it was 8:30. My sneaky, conniving little older brothers had wanted an extra hour's sleep. So while I was asleep, they had snuck in and moved my watch back an hour. And yes, it was brilliant, say the diabolical, but I was, anyway, so they got woken up quite loudly, but they got an extra half hour. So that's my story.
I love that because I have the opposite. My brother and I were not good children, and we could not get up. Our parents said stay in your room, right, until we let you up. Well, so you know, we'd get up about 7:30, but we always wanted to sneak in and see what Santa had left before our parents let us up. And we did that every year, tried to sneak in, and of course the parents would hear us and say, get back in your room. Oh, great. So one year at my grandparents' house, we found one of those little tiny plastic flashlights, and we thought, we hatched an enormous plan that at 4 a.m. my brother would wake up. And we had all this written out. We had planned it out on a piece of paper and to hide it from my parents so they wouldn't find it. We put it in cellophane and taped it to the underside of the back of the toilet so that they would never see it. And we had this all planned out. So at 4 a.m., he had the flashlight, and he was going to sneak out of this room and come down and get me. And we'd go into the living room and not turn on any lights because that would be a, you know, dead giveaway. And we'd go in the living room and look around no more than 15 seconds. That was the goal, 15 seconds, and then run back to our rooms. And the day it came as Christmas Day, 4 a.m., he gets up, he comes, wakes me up, we go in there, we run to the living room, we go, and in my mind, I imagine the Mission Impossible theme happening right now. And honest to goodness, we looked, and we had the flashlight, and went back to our rooms, and I couldn't remember one thing that I'd seen because I was so anxious about getting caught and so nervous. So it's like, successful mission, failed opportunity. I was there, didn't see a thing. Did not see a thing. Oh.
Well, everybody looks like they're spent. No, you had one.
Had
yeah.
Yeah.
It's not as good as mine, though. No. Oh, of course.
It's a happy one for me.
Oh, for you. Yeah, got it.
My husband fell in the Vatican when we were there for our honeymoon.
What?
It was right outside the doors of the sanctuary. It had been raining, and I turned around and see him getting up and a guard just shaking his head. I was like, Andrew, what happened? He goes, I slipped. Let's just keep walking. But that was
people would have thrown money at him.
I mean, really, we should have because
that's what they do.
We needed it. We needed it.
No, but I do have a happy Christmas Eve story too. So my dad, I was in high school, he's done this for about 12 years now. He makes New Year's Eve videos. They're on YouTube, and it's just all the videos that are pictures we've collected throughout the year, he puts them in videos. And so 2018, we were over there for Christmas Eve to watch these videos, and one starts, and it's of my dog Harvard, whom I love dearly. We're watching this. I'm crying. I don't know why, but I am. And video's playing. So cute. Next thing I know, Andrew's on the screen. And then I look down and he's on his knees to propose. And so, it was wonderful. But what was funny is I was so invested in this video of my dog that I didn't notice that, like, my mom and sisters had, like, scooted the couch back, all had their cameras out. My dad's on the other side of the room videoing. And I'm just like, oh, look at my dog. He's so cute. I'm crying. Didn't notice any of them filming, moving. I had no clue. Even when Andrew came on the screen and started talking about, like, our life, I was like, is everyone in the family going to talk about how much they love Harvard? Like, that's where my mind was. And my dad told me later, because then all of a sudden Andrew was on his knees, and I was like, I did not see this coming at all. And my dad's like, we were trying to figure out how to, like, make this sneaky so you wouldn't know. And he's like, we're going to make a video of her dog, because she will be so invested in watching her dog.
He knows you well.
Yes. So 2018, we did that. And I will say, for those of you that have kids, I don't know how you do Christmas, because Andrew and I spent too much money on our two dogs. And I'm like, if we had kids, we would be bankrupt, because I don't know how parents manage to do this every year, because we went shopping the other day and I was like, how? We just keep buying things for these dogs. Yeah. So yes. Can't have both, apparently.
You know, I was sitting here thinking, like, hearing, like, when Dana was talking about, like, this just meaningful Christmas, and the meaningful Christmases for us looked a little different. It was a little bit more like what Mark was describing, because there were two boys that were children, so we got a lot of humor out of doing things that we probably shouldn't do. And like, speaking of that, I probably shouldn't say this on here, but that being said, like, one of our most fun traditions was to take my mother's Merry Christmas blocks and turn that into Merry Shipmas. And she was not a fan of that tradition, and of course we went to the well one or two or a thousand too many times with that, to the point where I don't know where those Christmas blocks are, but I would love to find them. And it's like those little things that are so meaningful today, or the fact that my mother's dad had a Christmas tree on wheels and it horrified her, and it was like the decorations and the lights and everything was hot glue gunned onto it, and he rolled that thing out and plugged it in, and then when Christmas was over, he unplugged it and rolled it back. And so, like, I was really upset when my grandfather passes away, and we're doing all the things that need to be done there, and I realized the tree's gone. And, like, one of the first things that my mother did was get rid of that tree. And I was like, that's like throwing away the lamp from the Christmas story. Like, I would still be using that thing and could today. But those little things, and, like, thinking about the Christmases that actually were more memorable, were the ones that were, like, just being with. I remember there was a Christmas when my father was sick, but, like, the pressure of Christmas being taken off, or, like, the last Christmas that we had the rolling tree, we spent at my grandfather's house, and he was sick, and those were the ones that I guess they didn't look like that, that Hallmark Christmas moment, but they're the ones that get talked about the most, or just the little things, like, you know, telling my grandfather anytime we got anything with instructions, he'd be like, okay, just go ahead and throw that away. And So, I mean, that has been quoted over and over and over again, and I'm sure that, like, my nephews were just like, what are they talking about? Because we constantly did those things. But those are the fun things about Christmas, the traumatic and trauma versions of that, I guess, that are so much fun.
Well, I can speak on your mother's behalf because we don't have blocks, but I am a huge fan, and I actually collect nativity sets, and so have nativity sets from all over the world. And it's so beautiful how different cultures include different things. Like in South America, it seems that the Magi arrived on llamas, not on camels, you know, and all of that. So anyway, I love that. And so They speak very dearly to me, and my beloved husband recognizes this and so often will give me this. So we have one, sort of the larger one. And every now and then you look over there and next to baby Jesus is like a big black dog. Or some other, my kids love to sneak stuff into this nativity set. You know, something else is, I'm not even sure what it is. It came from New Orleans, so maybe Shelby, you would recognize, but some Mardi Gras thing that is, you know, has taken Mary's place in the nativity. So the other great family tradition that we have is we make pretty cool, in my opinion, gingerbread houses. You know, quite detailed and all of that. So the other day, I found the perfect Kaufman thing, which is a gingerbread nativity set. And I thought, you know, it doesn't get any better than this. And so, I bought it. And then I thought, oh, you know what? I could buy the cookie cutters. So we could be making this from here on in. And then I thought of my children. And I realized, if I buy this, the nativity sets that they make are not going to be particularly reverent. And I realized it probably is not in our best interest to go down this path. And our son, who's living with us, passed that on to his siblings, and they seemed somewhat surprised, but not really. So I'm yet to purchase the cookie cutters for the nativity set. And the other one is still in its box.
My goodness. Well, is there anybody else that needs to go? Anything else we need to say? Well, Mark?
I have one more.
Oh, you do?
Annette came in halfway while we were recording this, and she reminded me of one when my brother and I, who were the, along with Matt, you know, brothers, maybe that's it. We actually found, when we were older in our teens, we actually found that our parents, don't know what they were thinking, tried to hide all of our presents under their bed. And so a week before Christmas, my parents had left, and my brother and I just got all our presents out, and we're playing with this great racetrack. We actually took it out of the box and had set it around the room, and they got home early. Like, we heard them pull in, and my brother, who's 4 years older than me, and for some reason I looked up to him, he said, "Stall them." And I ran to the front door and was like, "Hey, how was shopping?" And he's furiously throwing things back in the box, and so he throws it all back under the bed, and he literally hear their door in their bedroom go shunk, and he's standing there with that look of, "I'm innocent," and we were so good at lying, they never figured it out.
Oh, well, what a nice trip down memory lane this has been. Thanks all. We got Christmas services galore coming up, and on Christmas Eve, that's Saturday night this year, right?
Yes.
We've got a 4:00.
That would be the family
service.
Children can come dressed up as angels or shepherds. Or llamas.
Llama shepherds, yeah. And then at 7:00
is in the contemporary service, but all of these will have communion and candlelight. That's a contemporary version.
Yeah. And then 11:00
in the sanctuary, and it's kind of the more formal end of that spectrum, where everything's very traditional and beautiful, and you get out right at midnight. It's really fun.
If Mark, I'll always think of that service as being one where I, my mom had knitted sweaters that matched for all of us, spouses, everybody, and we all had to wear them coming into the sanctuary. Isn't that Christmas? All right. Well, thank you all for staying with us through this this madness today. Jenny,
Do we want to mention that there will also be a service on Christmas Day? We'll just have one service at 11 o'clock.
We talked about the Christmas Eve, but yeah, definitely. For a lot of people don't realize maybe that Christmas Day falls on Sunday this year. So, and that means New Year's Day falls on Sunday as well. So it'll be a little bit of a different schedule for things than the usual Sunday schedule, but it's going to be great. I'm really, really wishing that I could be here for all of that, but Christmas is a good time. So I think we should conclude by singing to the congregation.
Oh, well, we wish you a Merry Christmas.
We wish you a Merry Christmas.
We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Thank you all, and God bless.